Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 62, Episode 2 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, the podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness using the headlines, box office reports, TV ratings, what's trending on Googs and social meds. It's Tuesday, December 18th, 2018. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. All the Jack O'Brien, and the Miles of Gray. Listen to a pod with Anna Hosnier, second rate at best. All right, that's that is courtesy of Chad A. Blakey, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Have you heard this second rated podcast with the hottest takes? Get your ED tips from at Miles of Gray and listen to the Daily Zeitgeist today.
Beautiful. We're all weeping in the studio.
Thank you so much to Will Kendrick for that one. You even retweeted it because you're like, this went unseen. Yes. And I feel like it must see the light, and I did. So thank you for opening
He knew
my
it was
eyes.
Fire.
Yes.
Hey, speaking of fire, we're thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of the faces on Mount Zeitmore. Mm-hmm. He is the hilarious comedian, Billy Wayne Davis.
Hey, you guys.
What's up, man?
Nothing.
That's a nice watch
cool.
you got on.
Thank
Sorry,
you.
Just take it out of completely go to visual
That's
suddenly.
That's fine. I'm proud of it.
I'm loving it. Yeah.
It took a while to find the right one.
Okay.
Well, it is the right one. It suits you well.
It's not even right. The time isn't right.
It doesn't work.
I haven't. You know how you could read the instruction manual when you get something new like that?
Yeah.
But then you're like, I'm going to figure it out.
Nah, just toss
it's
it
been,
on.
It's been a couple
It's weeks. Right.
I always end up reading the instruction manual for my car, like when I'm about to turn it back in.
Really? Like you just want to be like,
man, I'm like, oh shit, I could have done that.
I missed out on a lot of stuff.
That's what that button's
right.
for.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, you're right. You can open the trunk. Okay. Didn't realize.
I knew that crease was there.
Yeah, I didn't. I thought it was a fake trunk.
Billy Wayne, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of things we're talking about. We are going to talk about the thing that is on everybody's mind, the Washington Post article proclaiming a hot dog to technically be a taco, which sounds stupider than it actually is. Somebody worked out a sort of...
I think it's appropriately stupid.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's stupider than it is.
Somebody worked out a comprehensive, like, cube rule of food for identifying dishes based on starch locations.
Yeah.
And it actually... makes sense. We're going to talk
about... I think it's an argument for overpopulation.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
We're going to talk about Trump ending up taking his sister to prom.
Yeah, that's what I call Mick Mulvaney becoming chief of staff.
I read these headlines as I see them for the first time. Mm-hmm. Giuliani.
Oh, okay. I was like, okay.
Yeah, sorry. It needs to be delivered properly.
And I also figured, like, I was like, it feels like there's more important things to talk about that he's doing than that.
Right. So, yeah, Mick Mulvaney is going to be his chief of staff, at least acting chief of staff for the time being. We're going to talk about yet another tour de force by Rudy Giuliani on the morning shows yesterday. We're going to talk about Russia social media fuckery and who they were aiming at, and yet more evidence that CBS is a fucking disaster when it comes to sexual politics. All that and more. But first, Billy Wayne, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
This week I was looking up Invader. You know, they got the French artist Invader. Yeah.
Who does a Space Invader street art?
Yes. Mm-hmm. His prints, what they're worth, because he has an exhibit downtown at, I think it's called Inside the Cube or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Was that MoCA?
It's just in that downtown gallery area.
Oh, okay. Just like at a gallery?
Yeah.
Okay.
I took my son down there last week. And you know when you like, it's LA or like bigger cities when you see a line for no reason in this area of town, you're like, and then everyone's wearing Yeezys and has Rolexes, but they're also wearing sweatpants.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was like, there's something cool happening.
So you just get in line.
We did. Yeah. My son and I got in line, and then we figured out his prints, they were releasing his prints. So he only releases 100. And then we stood in line. I was like, we're going to buy one. And then the price slowly got back to where we were standing. They're like, it's $1,600. I was like, we're just going to go to the museum.
Yeah. Wait, so, how do you print one of his works?
Because it's like usually tiles, right?
Yeah, he just
puts
tiles.
He prints one. Like, he prints them.
Oh,
it's like, it's one of his things, and then he prints.
It's a photograph of it, basically?
Well, it's like a poster. It's a poster
right.
size.
But it's but I'm saying the way he puts his art up is through mosaic tile right? Yes.
Well, that's what the exhibit is, like all his tile redone and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
And then there's like new stuff on canvas that's really cool. It's awesome. They just extended it through December 30th. I'm not getting paid to say any of this.
Yeah.
And it was cool because I liked him, and I introduced him to my son, who's 9, and he was like, this is awesome. And then we see him throughout town. It's really fun. And then, so I was like, I don't have $1,500 to gamble on this.
Right.
Because I don't know if it's like real cool, or it's going to be worth money, or if it's just like, these people are like, love this dude.
No, they're hype beasts. They're there for the resale.
I realized after I walked away and I Googled like Invader prints and was like, oh no.
Right. They're like,
can I give blood?
You asked your son, you're like, you don't want to go to college, right?
Yeah, it was that. Yeah, it was like, yeah, I have $1,500.
Right.
Oh, so it was a good deal? You were going to actually make money on it?
The next day, they were selling for $35.
Damn.
Woo!
That was the next day.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, yeah, just follow the goons in sweatpants. And
so I've been all over the internet. Like, how did you guys? But it's like hype beast.
Yeah, and I mean, the resale market is like its own thing, which is funny because like I would have told you if you're in line, you just go, "Hey, what's this reselling at?" Because that's the whole reason.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't want to mess up. You know what I mean?
Right. Like,
you know,
when
it's like
everyone
seemed to like know stuff,
right?
And the language
they
were speaking, I was like, "Just be cool, son."
Right? They're like, "Yo, this guy's a herb."
Yeah, exactly. Right. It was like. But people were on the phone like, get down here. I was like, oh, something's happening.
You just called somebody. You're like, yeah, get down here.
I didn't know. I was like, who do I call that knows cool stuff?
Right. Yes. For people who don't know, again, if this whole conversation went by you, Invader does mosaic tile, like sort of 8-bit looking art of like Space Invaders characters
all over cities,
around the world.
Yeah,
and I love it because it is fun. Like for people that like cities, and then it's just like a little. Hey, look at that.
Yeah. And you notice it and you're like, oh, there's an invader. Yeah.
Like my son was like, I was on a field trip. I saw one.
And yeah.
He, I was like, what street? And he was like, Vermont. And I was like, was it this? He was like, that was it.
Yeah. You see him in Europe, Asia. Yeah, he gets out and up there.
So you seem like a cool dad this weekend. It sounds like you're
I try to be like, find stuff that we both like that we can share because some stuff neither of us share that, but we have to do it together.
Right. You know? Right. But he's like talking about what you guys did at school today. That's pretty cool.
That's something I'm sure to aspire to. Yeah, that was probably.
Yeah, that's fucking dope, man. That. Congratulations.
Yeah, instead I'm like, my dad made me walk with a limp so he could get a discount at the store.
What do y'all think of that? Oh, I should have made him.
Yeah. He's another one of these Banksy types where like his face is a mystery, but they according to Google, they know he was born in 1969.
It's kind of old, too.
But you know that, but you don't know who he is?
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It says born 1969, age 49, but then, like, there's no pictures of his face. I mean, this is based on a very cursory Google search, but...
Well, no, they don't, you know. And it also, like, every article leads with, like, he's wearing a mask. Anybody that interviews him, and they're always like, he smells like cigarettes. I'm like, well, he's French.
Yeah, exactly.
All checks out.
So he's French.
Yeah. So what's the question?
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty clear.
Yeah. So we know he's... Born in 1969 in French and smokes. So that
in his art's like fun.
Right.
It's like mix it up.
Yeah,
like,
I was expecting him to be very young. That's why that detail jumped out at me. And also it's the only detail we know about him.
Or like his parents think he's a tiler for a construction company.
Yeah. That's what my parents think I do. What's something you think is underrated?
Community.
Hey. I love that show.
I know. I think it's properly. I think that show is properly rated. Uh-huh. The people that love it are right, and the people that are like, this is fine, are also right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
No, but you mean community in the general sense.
Yes. Like, just getting to know your neighborhood and, like, that like kind of that stuff. And, like, it builds out from there, and I think we're losing that.
We are definitely losing that. I have a whole rant on that in the third section, but
Get your eye mask ready.
Yeah, I spit a lot when I get worked up. That's something people don't realize.
He screams like Tennyson.
Yeah, there's just spit.
You put
everywhere.
A dental hygienist blast shield on.
Yeah. He gets what they call in the Midwest real Pentecostal about.
Yes, there's squeegees on the wall in the office, just ready to go.
Wait, so did you get like? Have you been starting to get to know your neighbors more, or just know your community in terms of your neighborhood, or what's spurred this on?
Well, I travel a lot, so there's like. I've noticed there are a few places I really love going now because what I've realized is they're very original places.
Shout them out.
Humboldt County, that whole area, the North Lost Coast.
Uh-huh.
I love that. Geography kind of makes it its own little thing too.
Right.
New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
There's a community there that is accepted. Like, this is how this is. If you want to live here, you have to be a part of this. And if not, go away.
Right.
But we all know each other. It's a small town.
Right.
I like that those kind of places. San Francisco used to be like that, but I don't feel that there anymore, which is very strange.
Yeah.
But I did notice I did a show in San Jose, which used to be this ghost town of a city.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there last week, I guess. And I made the joke. I was like, oh, I see what's happening because San Jose's like kind of popping.
Right.
And I was like, oh, people can't live in San Francisco anymore. So, and then they're like, yeah. And I was like, oh, so this is where all the cool people came.
Yeah.
And they're like, so there's like a little breweries popping up and all these like shows. So I was like, oh, okay, this is where you guys came.
It's like how Philadelphia became cool once all of New York turned into Disneyland.
Exactly.
Like,
yes.
Where only extremely wealthy people could live. I've read a lot of stuff about this, like that we're now more scared. Like, this is the first time the past decade that people are like scared to let their kids out in their neighborhood because, and I think one of the theories was that it's because we just don't know our neighbors anymore.
Right.
So it's like they're as much strangers to you as anyone, whereas like people just used to. I think it's a lack of boredom. I think a lack of boredom is really fucking us because, like, people used to be like, well, I don't know, let's go talk to that guy who's out on the street walking
his
dog.
Right, right, right.
And now,
rather than, like, let's
still
go.
Their kids still have that.
Yeah. But,
yeah,
but they also have, like, phones and games and shit to take up their time.
Yeah, but I think there is something to be said about the not knowing your neighbors.
Yeah.
And it used to be a lot, like, families lived around each other. So you did kind of know your neighbors.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So there's that part of it. And now people are like, because of transportation and all that, the technology, you're like, no, I don't want to live where you can come over to my house without you having to take an airplane.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But we can still be tight.
What is something you think is overrated?
Variety.
Variety is overrated.
Yeah.
It was
one of the best industry magazines for LA. Yes. For sure.
I do think, probably. Yeah. I mean, that is weird. You can tell when people buy stuff in that magazine. It's so funny. You're like, well, this article is
paid for. Okay, whatever.
Crazy. This is crazy. No, I mean, like,
the spice of life.
To a certain degree, but our access to it is too much.
Oh, okay, right.
So right now we need to scale it back till we learn how to have access to everything.
Right, because it's overwhelming now, is what you're
saying. Yeah, I think society at this point is like a king, like a 13-year-old king, where they were like 12, just a 12-year-old, and then some people died, and then they're like, now you're the king, and you have access to everything you could ever want, and they're like, they do a lot of dumb shit.
Right. Yeah.
It's just like, we have this access to all this stuff, and we don't know how to
deal with it.
Properly processed.
Like specifically what?
Television. Your television shows. News outlets. Do you know what I mean? Like, everything's specialized.
Right.
There's not like, you know, like I go to this one online store that is just, it's not one product. It's just, for whatever reason, it's everything I kind of dig.
Right.
Right.
Which is strange. You know what I mean? So I don't have to go to these different places.
Right.
But it's like, I still love going to record stores and flipping through and finding. But then, like, if there's something like I really, really want, there's no adventure. I just.
Yeah, you're like, you just summon it instantly.
Yeah. And instead, I think what bothers me about it is, like, instead of using that to gain knowledge and information and make the world better for all of us, we use it to buy shit.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So it has, I think that's. It's not variety that's overrated. It's the technology and what we're using it for is overrated.
Right, that we're losing many other things. Like, we're trading convenience for all these other experiences that
that's
actually
probably
have a lot of value.
I think that's probably what it is. What I'm trying to say more than variety is convenience is overrated.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were saying the average Netflix user spends an average of 18 minutes on a given day deciding what to watch.
Yeah, that's me. High with food in front of me.
Right.
Yeah.
I've
till your food's done and then you find something to watch.
It's fucking cold. Yes. One time I've been like, yo, I'm gonna, like, in my mind, I have this perfect situation where, like, I'm eating
something.
You gotta
know what you want to
watch. Yeah,
watch.
Like, or it's fucked up.
Yes.
My
yes.
night is ruined.
Yes.
You know, Her Majesty and I will fucking knife fight over shit that we're supposed to watch while we're eating. And, like, now, I realize that there is such this. It's like, what is it? Like not sensory overload, but like when you have too many options.
Right. It's decision paralysis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just like, fuck, man. I remember when Netflix only had like 8 things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
like the 4 fucking things that are on there. Now it's everything. Now I don't even know which shitty Christmas movie to watch.
Well, right. I don't There's like too the many of them. Algorithm because if you like us, like you go on a binge of watching a certain type of thing, then for 2 months, that's all the type of shows they show you.
Right.
So if you don't throw in something different every now and then, you're like, well, I watch everything that Pablo Escobar has ever done.
right.
Which is, if you go on mine, is like, you really like Pablo
Escobar. That's the benefit
Escobar.
Of sharing
I did
your,
for like a week.
That's the benefit of sharing your Netflix login because other people will fuck the algorithm up for you.
That's
like,
pretty funny.
Okay.
I should do that for my son.
Yeah.
But I mean, there used to be huge, well-paid people who worked at networks who made those decisions for you.
Right.
They're just like, oh, I know I can turn on Comedy Central and I'll get a bunch of ads and it'll be annoying, but at least I'll know that Comedy Central has like some shit that I'm going to find funny, you know, once every couple 15 minutes or whatever. And now we have this 18 minutes of decision-making added into our lives that used to be boredom and flipping around to other channels to try and get around the ads. And now we have to spend that time trying to decide if we want to watch the Kurt Russell Christmas movie or the whatever.
Well, I remember from like 15 to probably 22, when I turned on the TV, it was like MTV or ESPN were the only two channels.
Right,
boom, boom. And then whatever was on there, it was like, that's what we're watching.
So easy.
Right.
Yeah.
And my sister's a like information, like web design architect, and like their whole thing is like, you know, narrowing down the number of decisions. Like you only have like three buttons on any given like screen.
Right.
But I feel like our life is full of, you know, screens with 45 buttons that we have to choose from, and it fucks with us.
And if you're just tuning in, this is old guy talk.
Jack I'm Billy sick Miles. Of it. I'm tired of all of it.
Too
the
much.
Gadgets and the
I remember
wiring.
When there were two channels,
and
right. off and on,
and the boogles and the hoogles. Who gives a shit? I don't give a shit.
What's a myth? What's something people think is true? You know to be false.
I think a good myth is that money doesn't buy happiness. It's like, as you get older, you realize, like, I don't know, like, I could set up my life if I had a certain amount of money where it would be, like, pretty fucking happy about this.
right.
Is there that Daniel Tosh joke? He's like, yeah, money can't buy happiness, but it can buy a jet ski.
Right.
You ever seen me frown on a jet ski? It can't be done. It's just, it's like, I remember thinking about, like, he's just making a joke. And then you get older, you're like, no, there's some truth to what he's saying.
Yeah. I remember when Roy in The Office had to get rid of his jet skis. He lost it.
He did.
At the bar. I remember him and his brother lost their shit at the bar. They had to give up their jet skis.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see you frowning on jet ski if you lived in a town where jet ski was the only mode of travel. So you're like, you're going to work on your jet ski.
Right.
You're going home.
Yeah, like Marco Island, Florida. Yeah.
Is that how it is?
There's a lot of channels there. So people
just get around on a jet ski.
Their jet skis are their boats. Yeah.
I would love to see just someone having a tough time on a jet ski or paddleboard.
It breaks down a lot, so he's got an oar with him. It's like somebody with an old car. Sometimes you have to push it.
Hey, can I get a jump real quick, my man?
It's okay. I'll get it. This thing ain't turning over.
My friend Alex was always talking about making an 80s movie where it was like an evil jet ski gang was like harassing this dude who like had, like a shitty jet ski that like broke down on the way to school. And like there because that's like how those movies
operated.
You
gotta recontextualize jet skis. But I think I have the same thing. I'm like, yo, if I just lived in this little shack and had the internet and like whatever, I could be all right for a little bit.
Oh, I could be all right for a long, long time on a mountaintop.
Yes. Yeah, alone.
Like, yeah. But I mean, I'm also real about like, that's my goal is like Humboldt County, you can have a farm on a mountain that overlooks the ocean, which I didn't know was an option. And then I went there and I was like, this is a good option. It's like the best option I've ever seen. Yeah. But then like when I got real with myself, like I would have to have somebody running this farm for me.
Right.
Because I would need a balance of like being here and then I would have to go mix it up.
Right.
You know.
You can't just give your life to the farm, to the mountain.
Not yet.
No,
yeah, but like it's a plan to eventually be like become a true hillbilly.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, where you're just like, get off my land.
I saw him.
He does exist. His tail. Yeah. I think that's what the goal is.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network. Work.
And we're back. And this was a story I saw all over the place yesterday and over the weekend about whether the hot dog is technically a taco. It seemed very stupid to me. And then you kind of pointed out to me, Miles, that this is based on a comprehensive cube rule of food and how starches interact with the food that they're surrounding.
Yeah, it is. I mean, is the hot dog a sandwich debate has been something the internet has been talking about for a long time. I think even Stephen Colbert asked Ruth Bader Ginsburg to weigh in on like what her beliefs were. And in the Washington Post, they found they're going off this dude who came up with the cube rule. He basically, this man says there are 8 categories of food, all defined by the placement of starch. So use the cube as your guideline for like how you can define what each dish is. So if the starch is on the bottom and you have shit on top, it's toast. If you have sandwich on top and bottom, it's a sandwich. If it is a U-shaped starch, it is a taco. If it's a four-sided starch covering with the ends exposed, it's sushi.
Like a sushi roll.
Yeah, like a sushi roll. If you just have 5 sides with an open top, like a bread bowl, that's a soup or salad with bread bowl. Okay?
Okay. So.
Technically, like a pumpkin pie would be a bread bowl salad because of this. Now, if it's completely encased in starch, it's a calzone.
Right.
Yeah. So those are the rules that this man has put
this
out.
This is starch-based food.
Yes, this is all starch-based soup. However, now if there is starch, but it's a mismatch and it's not like in a specific place according to like the visualization of a cube, for example, fried rice or mashed potatoes or poutine. Those are salads.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I so mean,
come on.
Fried chicken is a calzone because the breading is all around it.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
I always knew that. Fried chicken was a calzone.
By science.
Yes.
Fried chicken is a calzone.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a very odd way to look at it, but this is someone trying to make sense to be like, well, let's really talk about starch placement.
I do want to go to KFC and like, give me a bucket of calzone.
Right.
Chicken calzones.
Chicken calzones.
Well, I guess, but by this roll, though, too, like if you did like a hero that's just a roll just split down the middle.
That's a taco.
That's a taco then.
Yeah.
That's not even a sandwich.
Yeah. What is a pita? Because a pita is kind of basically a...
That's a bread bowl.
Bread bowl on its side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A typical
like a
bread
lazy
bowl.
Bread bowl.
Yeah. Yes. So these are just very, you know...
I like that they went with, for number one, the most important one, the one that they first had to start out with, they went with toast instead of pizza.
Yeah. I think just trying to keep
so
it simple.
So pizza is just toast?
Yeah, that's
well, toast. Is
it's
like
it's a subcategory. It's part of the toast kingdom.
Right. Or an open-faced sandwich, you could call it. But toast is like a very specific thing.
Well, yeah, a lot of these descriptions, I'm like, does it have to be, I guess, the sushi is the only way to describe that, or bread bowl, or calzone?
Yeah, no, that's my favorite part is when he's like, and somebody's like, what's sushi then? And he's like, well, it's just sushi.
Right.
Right. Like he kind of gets stubborn at the end.
Right, right. Well, that's a sushi.
Well, yeah, except
like,
well,
and a bread bowl?
What if it's encased? And you're like, well, that's a calzone. Yeah, right. But what about this? You're like, it's fried chicken's a calzone.
Well,
get
but
out
actually,
of my office.
So sushi is not sushi. Sushi rolls are sushi, but sushi that is just on a piece of
rice,
like
so
rice on a
toast.
Piece would be toast.
Yeah.
So sushi is toast. And sushi
nah,
rolls
that's,
are sushi.
Man, now that you say that, he mm-hmm. lost. I cannot abide.
Yeah, there's a lot
she
of
does
holes
not toast.
In his.
I mean, yes. But it's just funny because it's an interesting way to visualize it. But yeah, a lot of. I guess I don't like that we're gonna reduce something that's so specific to being like, well, that's toast.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I don't like that that people have to be like, well, what's a hot dog? Or it's a fucking hot dog.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like
well,
that
yeah,
panini
I guess...
is a panini. Yes, fried chicken is fried chicken.
Yeah, this is...
That's a sandwich.
Right.
Yes, that's a taco.
Right.
Yes.
Weren't we just talking about how people need to be bored again?
Yes.
So now they're like, how do I
Well, no, but this is what we
laws.
Do instead of boredom. See, there right. is like a bottomless bucket of shit like this that we can just focus on and think about instead of
This used
of
to be
like...
for drunk people.
Right.
These conferences. This used to be right. for drunk people at a bar being like, no, a hot dog's a taco.
Right. Except that conversation ended up like, that used to just die right there at the bar and they wouldn't even remember they had it the next day.
Yes.
But because somebody had a drunk conversation online, that got preserved and then spread worldwide, and now everybody's thinking about it.
Yes.
And that's
I
what
think
we're thinking
viral
about.
Is the right
instead
word.
Of, hey, I wonder what that neighbor's up to.
Right.
Like, why
exactly.
does he never come
it's
out
like
the
sushi.
Front door?
I think
he
it's
only
still
goes out
there,
the back
though.
Door.
I think we're wired more than a lot of people because of where we live. I still think, like, I go back to visit my family in East Tennessee, and they still know what their people are doing.
I also think it's very mm-hmm. generational, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, also, I think in a small town, Facebook or whatever, that's how they're doing that.
Right. And they grew up around each other
yes.
a lot of the time.
So they so, know yeah. who's, like, every time I go back, I don't have Facebook, I have a fan page. I go back and do a show the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving in my hometown, and I always, like, when I'm promoting it, I get to catch up on Facebook.
Right.
What all my friends are doing.
Uh-huh.
And then it's all right there. But they're not doing anything bad. It's
right.
just like, I know who dumped who and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's weird when I'm like, hey, yeah, you're with so-and-so. And they're like, how'd you even know that?
Right. But that's a conversation that would have taken place over beers before Facebook, and now it takes place in a room by yourself, like in 20.
Yeah, when I'm in Des Moines.
In 10 minutes. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Exactly, yeah.
So well, it is a lonelier experience still.
It's funny because there were like lawsuits over the definition of a burrito, right?
Oh,
so there was
off.
A Panera Bread that tried to argue in a court in Massachusetts that a burrito is a sandwich because a Qdoba... the Mexican restaurant opened up at the mall food court, and they had an agreement. They said, you're violating the shopping, the food court contract, because mm-hmm. they said, we would be the only sandwich racket in town.
Right.
And then they're out here being like, they're like, the burrito's a sandwich.
Right.
And the judge was like, nah, man, the burrito is not a sandwich.
This is,
nah,
dude.
And the USDA Food Standards and Labeling Policy Book describes a burrito as a Mexican sandwich-like product.
Uh-huh. It's a Mexican calzone, isn't it?
But that's what this man is saying. He's like, nah, this is, he's like, because this guy on Twitter, you can submit things to him and be like, well, what's a gusher? And he's like, that's a calzone.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But no, it's not, because that's not starch.
This is what, again, I'm not making
it. Miles, it's not.
This is this guy.
You also send me a question. You're like, what's a blowjob feel like? And he's like, pass.
Pass.
Right.
What's sexy?
It's like sushi.
Yeah, I don't know
what
it is. She makes a sushi out of her mouth. And...
yeah.
It's a burrito.
It's right. actually a bread bowl.
If she does it right, it's a burrito.
But so it's just, because he, like, it's funny because the response is when someone's like, well, what's a burrito? His answer is like, that would be a topic of debate. It's created with a single tortilla roll. By nature, it feels like more of a four-sided object. I would be willing to consider it as a calzone as well.
Yeah.
And I like going into business thinking like, okay, that is some like mafia style business practices where you're like, yo, no one else can do what I'm doing in this area.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
And they're like, okay, but we're going to have burritos. No.
No.
Yeah. People can eat those.
Well, right. Corporations left to their own devices without regulation immediately become the mob, it seems like.
Well, that's where they stole their
right.
business model.
Yeah, exactly.
Because all the money goes to the top.
Right.
And yep. then
Yeah, and you just shake people down.
And you align yourself with other goons to protect you from the other ones.
Yeah, and you're so powerful, no one can do anything.
All right, we have to get to
Rudy Giuliani.
Famous mobster, the president of the United States.
Yeah.
We will just mention really quickly that famous calzone factory, KFC, is selling a Duraflame log that smells like fried chicken. So that's something to
check that out.
Think
it's
about.
$18.
Yes. But yeah, so Trump.
That would be a nightmare if I was high.
Don't check that out.
Yes. How about not?
Just look at it and then go, okay.
I would
and
just
then
have
go
a
on.
Stomach ache the whole time. I'd be like, oh God, what is this?
It reminds me, it's like a version of that Mitch Hedberg joke where he's like, I want to make incense that smells like cinnamon rolls
right.
to mess with my roommates.
Yeah. They tell you when you're like showing a house that you're about to sell to make cinnamon rolls or cookies. So he would actually have become a billionaire.
He tried to sell them, I think, on his
website
really?
For
a little
bit.
Just toss a KFC log in there.
Yeah. But yeah, let's talk about the mobster in chief and his consigliere.
I think that gives him too much credit.
Right. Yeah,
I think he's a mafia pawn.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think he has the.
He's a guy who's not quite a made guy, who acts like he's a made guy, but he's not a made guy.
But he has a lot of money, and they do like that about him.
Yeah, and like they keep him around because they're like, this guy, he'll pay for everything.
Yeah, he's like, he'll put his name on stuff, and then we get all the money.
And then we launder it through him, and he just does it for high fives.
And he says the funniest stuff out loud.
Yeah. And then Tom Hagen with dementia, Rudy Giuliani, was doing the rounds over the weekend to put together some crystal clear messaging about why Donald Trump is, in the words of the president, very legal and very cool.
Yeah.
Everything he's done is totally not a crime because nobody got killed. Nobody got hurt.
Nobody got robbed. Nobody got killed. What's the problem here? What's the crime?
Wow.
It's amazing that because he's kind of regurgitating the same talking points, it seems like this is the plan.
Yeah. No, because he went on George Stephanopoulos' show and then on Fox. And basically was like, oh, okay, this is the messaging now, which was basically just the same tired shit of like, yo, Michael Flynn got set up because the FBI told him he couldn't lie to them. Or John Edwards also did it. So, or Michael Cohen is a liar. So, you know, and then there are many, all kinds of very painful, painful arguments he made, which was sad because none of the shit that he said makes any legal sense.
Right.
You know, it's purely just a PR tactic to like obscure the truth and just get his base like kind of off balance so he can be like, yeah, right. So even though they got him basically named in this indictment, even though he's not an unindicted co-conspirator, maybe they're trying to do too. It's like very odd. I mean, and so it's just him doing.
I think Giuliani, like, I think the political establishment was like, beat it.
Right.
After a while. And now he's just like, misses it. And doesn't know what to do, and he can't play anymore.
Right.
So now they're just like, he's like, I'll just run interference for you criminals.
Right.
Just so I can get back at all these people
who
kicked me out of the game. Like, it feels like he doesn't care about Trump or anything. He's just throwing a wrench in the whole system because it won't let him play anymore.
Right. This is all a consequence of nobody wanting to go near Trump, like, during the election because they didn't think he was going to get elected.
Right.
And he was, you know, a pariah. And then after the election, he was like, haha, fuck all of you. None of you wanted to come near me. And the only people who are left aren't very good at their job. They were, you know, the people who were willing to come near him because for a reason. They didn't have anything else going on.
Yeah.
No one had asked them to the dance before.
Yeah.
And they're like, right. We can come in the room? Okay.
You're like, can I be DJ?
Right.
Yeah.
I have a gun. Is that okay? And there's just like one lady holding a lit dynamite stick. Like, this is a fun party.
Hey, what happens when that thing burns down? I don't know.
This candle's hot.
One of the really, I mean, throughout all of these interviews, you could just tell that, like you said, there isn't much of a legal strategy. And half the time, Giuliani's like admitting stuff. He's like, well, yeah, I mean, maybe they were talking to Russia up until November.
Do you think they had a conversation, though, like as attorney client? And Rudy was just like honest with him, like, oh, you're like, you're fucked because of what you've done. So here's what I'm going to do.
I don't know
if anyone's
going
to delay it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and I like to talk and drink. So I'm going to go
right.
drink, and then I'm going to go talk on TV and say some crazy stuff, yeah. and then people will talk about me. And it doesn't matter if they talk about me or not, because I can't play. This is just yeah. me playing the game. This is the only Roger Stone role I have at this
right.
point.
Right.
And so I can say crazy stuff,
mm-hmm.
right.
because technically you paid me a dollar,
right?
and I'm your attorney.
That seems way too coherent
yeah.
For the mind that we're about to hear.
Well, just... yes. So this was him on This Week.
I like to give people the benefit of the doubt.
With George Stephanopoulos, where we just watch a wild arc. This
I
is
love
a question.
That I defended him, and you guys are like, now listen to this.
Yeah. No, that's fine. But I would respond with this clip in which he gives a very interesting defense on WikiLeaks and collusion isn't collusion. I don't know. Here, just listen to this.
And did Roger Stone ever give the president a heads up on WikiLeaks leaks concerning Hillary Clinton and the DNC?
No, he didn't. No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
I don't believe so. Mm-hmm. But again, if Roger Stone gave anybody heads up about WikiLeaks leaks, that's not a crime. Oh. It would be like giving him heads up that the Times is going to print something. Once the crime, this is why this thing is so weird, strange. The crime is conspiracy to hack.
That's not why.
Collusion is not a crime. It doesn't exist. Now, conspiracy to defraud the government, you're right. Conspiracy to hack, that is the crime. We don't know whether... Now, did Donald Trump engage in a conspiracy to hack with the Russians? They've been going at it. The counterintelligence investigation came to the conclusion, no evidence.
Anyway, nice pivot there, Rudy. But his right. whole point is sort of like... It's fine if the Russians were trying to help him with the election.
What's wrong with that? He's trying to win.
But he's just trying to put it in the thing of Roger Stone told him this thing was going to happen, not right. really looking at the totality of the event, which is the Russians are hacking his political opponent and leaking damaging right. evidence to help him and signaling to him that it's going to happen so he can get in front of it and start messaging properly.
Right. With that, it's great diversion. Almost. Where you're arguing a minute point mm-hmm. while distracting from the larger crime, where yeah. you're just like, well, it's not, I mean, he didn't technically jaywalk right. when he robbed that bank.
Right,
right.
Yeah.
So, like, and no one got hurt but the money.
Right. It's almost like the food thing we were talking about, because they've managed to just, like, logic themselves into this version of reality where the only thing that is a crime is the person hitting the keystrokes that hacked into the...
Right.
people's email,
which isn't even a person, it was probably a computer program,
right? But like, knowing that Russia was trying to help you, not telling anybody, lying about it, and then coordinating with them and coordinating your like campaign strategy to benefit from that, is that's not okay. Is it, am I right in saying
yeah,
that?
No,
am I crazy?
It feels wrong.
Yeah,
it feels
doesn't
bad.
Feel right. Feels like,
hey, but we don't know
thing.
Who did it. Could have been some 400-pound guy in his mom's basement right. in New Jersey or whatever the fuck Trump
yes.
said.
all right. There are a couple of cabinet
funny.
Shakeups to he really is. There are a couple cabinet shakeups. Ryan Zinke is out as the Secretary of the Interior. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Because he did all sorts of corruption.
Too many investigations.
Yes.
He's literally leaving the game the second the Democrats have oversight. He's
yeah.
like, I'm not going to do this anymore.
And yeah, he was like, it would be too much of a waste of time to defend myself against all these false uh-huh. allegations.
Okay.
Why do
That's
you think
like OJ leaving. And be like, I'm just tired of this.
Right. Tired of you guys.
You guys thinking I did that murder I might have did.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave. I'm going to go to a country that won't extradite me.
What is it? Brazil? Is that the one? Is that where we're
Ecuador?
Supposed to go? Is that?
And then Mick Mulvaney is going to move over from, what was his role before?
He was really overseeing Office OMB of Management and Budget. Office
okay.
of Management.
He was
like,
the juggler in the White House.
Yeah, but they had him join everything. He did CPFB. Like, he anything they just needed him to just sort of move into, because he was already Senate confirmed for that position. Like, okay, go here, because
yeah.
no one wants it, or we have
he's
unconfirmable
the,
people.
He's the only one that understands how the government works.
Right,
and
right.
They're like, just let him do it. And he's like, I don't want to do this.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where, you know, Nick Ayers, who was Mike Pence's chief of staff, who was like, nah, fam, to the
right.
job. He was like, I only want to be interim. If I'm going to do it, it's only for the – it's like, I cannot be the chief of staff. Like, I'll
right.
do it for a little bit because I see the fucking arrows. They've already been launched.
Yeah.
I see them now starting to arc towards us.
Right.
And I don't want to be here when they fucking hit. And I think that was the
I
same thing.
I am curious how bad it is, though.
Yeah.
So I do
yeah.
want to peek at that.
Just,
and I want to get out.
And I go, oh, shit.
Oh,
okay.
It's worse than I thought, you guys.
Yeah, I thought it was a massive black cloud. It's a bunch of individual investigations coming our way. But, yeah, I think that's with Mulvaney. He did the same thing. He was very clear to be like, I want to be acting chief of staff. Don't say I'm chief of staff. I'm the acting chief of staff because he does not want to be there for a very long time. And I think for Trump, he just couldn't get anybody to say yes, or the people that he was even floating just seemed really like bad decisions.
Hey, do you want to come do a job that I'm going to blame you for?
Right.
Right.
Blame you for everything that goes wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, good luck to Mick. Good luck to the country because running OMB is also a very important job. So I hope they figure that out as well.
Yeah. Amazingly, again, he has a chief of staff who despises him. There's great audio of Mick Mulvaney just being like, am I going to support Donald Trump? I am. Do I like Donald Trump? I think he's a reprehensible human being, like a year ago.
Yeah, like yeah,
not,
exactly.
Not very long ago.
It was right before the election, I think.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so, he's like, do I want my son? Is he a role model of my sin? Absolutely not.
Yeah. I spit on the ground when I think of him.
But, am I an opportunistic fuckbag? Absolutely.
I live in D.C.
Does that answer your question? All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes, Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.
And we're back. As we record this, the Dow is down 600. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. But we also wanted to talk about CBS because they continue to be really bad at dealing with sexual harassment and assault. And there was a pretty detailed New York Times look at a case brought by Eliza Dushku, the daughter from True Lies, who has had a big career since then.
You mean Dana?
Dana! Jump! And Bull, Michael Weatherly, who is apparently...
Not Richard Mole.
Right. Exactly. He was on NCIS, and they decided, you know what? The thing about this guy is he has so much raw sexual charisma. We're going to give him a show that's all about sex. He's like a 50-ish dude, and the ads when the show came out was like, he's gonna get you off.
Oh,
because he's like a because he
subtle.
I don't know, for some reason, like, he's just an expert witness, but he also like solves cases, and because Michael Weatherly must have a high opinion of,
and he knows where the clit is,
right? Yeah. of his fall. Own sexual powers, he made the show about that. And so this investigation that started after Eliza Dushku like brought her case against them, like, was very revealing. So the character that she played had a running flirtation with Mr. Weatherly's character, and the producer, when she was first hired, said that they didn't want to have any intimacy until the show's fifth season because, you know, it was like one of those will they, won't they. Mm-hmm. But then...
That's very confident.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, when we get season 5, you guys are going to fuck.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like,
we're going to do 5 seasons of this?
Like, this is the pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, well, the thing
what
is,
do you
this
know?
Is...
Or did she, was it like mid-season she joined or something?
No, oh, no. I think you know, when other TV shows are playing checkers, Bull is playing chess. You know that. I don't have to tell you that.
Touche, Bull.
But then Michael Weatherly, the star, started saying cool things like when Eliza Dushku would come to a set, he would say, "Here comes legs." He said that in front of several cast and crew. And then he also said in front of them that he would like to bend her over his leg and spank her.
Now,
in front of the whole cast.
Was she misbehaving, though?
Right. Now, the amazing thing is...
That was a joke. That was
not only do we get an idea of what Michael Weatherly is like from his behavior on the set, but we also get to hear his justification of this behavior when the investigation was brought. Mr. Weatherly said the remark about spanking was meant as a joke. Quote, "I ad-libbed a joke, a classic Cary Grant line from Charade or Philadelphia Story, and that meant... not at all that that was an action I wanted to take." So he's like using like shitty actor improv lingo to justify sexually harassing somebody.
That's not a joke. This right. is, yeah. Again, I love people using like, that was a joke.
But right.
I was doing an ad lib from his porno I saw.
Yeah.
Right.
Called Creepy Fucking Coworker.
Yeah.
Power Dynamics.
At one point, her character raises 3 fingers like... That's what the script told her to do.
Like,
she
like
raised
counting,
3 fingers.
Like, hey, can we get threesome?
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And in response, Mr. Weatherly said, "Threesome?" And later, because he said it in front of the whole cast and crew, a crew member approached her and said with a chuckle, "I'm with Bull. Can I get in on that threesome with you?" Because it was like, and I think this is a good indication of just how the whole CBS thing works, is you have these powerful men who, like Les Moonves, like have people on retainer to give him blowjobs, like that he had actual employees right. at CBS who just, their only job really was to so give him blowjobs.
Sexual what? Gratification.
Yeah. And then...
what was the title?
I don't know
how the accounting department dealt with it.
Right. Yeah, there's like a human resources. There's yeah. a huge red flag there.
Yes.
It feels like.
But in this case, you know, Michael Weatherly, the star of their show, is just a complete monster to women, like publicly and, you know, openly on the mm-hmm. set. And so everybody sees that. Everybody's like, oh, this guy's the best.
Right. And then the crew's like, hey, I'm going to make a pass at this right. principal actor on this film.
Well,
right.
I'm not going to miss the threesome.
Right. Right. Yeah.
What the?
Then came the shooting of a scene involving a windowless van. Mr. Weatherly said he would take Ms. Dushku to his, quote, rape van, which
get
he added
it?
Was filled with phallic objects and lubricant. Now we get to, again, hear Mr. Weatherly
explanation
explaining this. He said, the scripted line in that scene was, hey, young lady, step into my windowless van. I didn't particularly like that line, so I joked in order to highlight how distasteful the emphasis of the line was about an... R van, a rape van, which in retrospect was not a good idea. So
an R van?
An R van.
Way to soften it.
Yes.
A retarded van?
Right.
What
yes.
the fuck is he?
An R word van. So Eliza Dushku went to Michael Weatherly. It was like, all right, here, one-on-one, like we're two actors trying to work here. And like,
hey, cool it.
Yes. You're really like making it awkward for me on set and also somewhat unsafe. She told him the story about the crew member who like asked her if she wanted to be in a threesome or like thought that was a funny joke to make while they were alone. And so she told him that and he was like, why didn't you tell anybody? Why don't you just bring charges against that person? And then 2 days later, she was written off the show.
Oh, well, CBS.
The plan to make her part of the cast was over. Mr. Weatherly did a really shitty denial of claiming to push for her removal. He said, it's my recollection that I didn't tell anyone how they should do their job regarding the hiring or firing of anybody. But he did send a, there is a text on record where he texted the head of CBS Studios and said, I'd like to have a talk about Eliza Dushku's sense of humor. So it was, she didn't get his jokes. So.
Yeah, cool. I mean, they got to keep revealing this shit.
Yes.
So they can avoid doing it. I mean, my, like, what the fuck? So did she, her, is.
She got $9 million.
Nine and a half.
And what happened with Weatherly? Does he have a show still or what? Yeah. Where is this?
I think that show is still on, or if not, they're probably developing the next Michael Weatherly project where he plays a fucking awesome dude who is the everyman that we all want to be.
Well, he made them a bunch of money for NCIS, right?
Right.
Yeah, so there's like a, it's a baby boomer lady show, right?
Yes.
That's who digs that show.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the trick with CBS that I'm figuring out more and more is that they're really good at like getting these soft targets of like audiences that nobody else wants. Like,
right.
So their ratings are really big.
Yeah.
But they're all shows for, like you said, like, you know, elderly women and like people who aren't like the target demographic. So they get to brag like we have the highest ratings, and they do.
Right.
But it's just like the demographics nobody else is really going
for. People on their deathbeds.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's like the people who make commercials for pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
It's like that's not the artistic, cool,
right,
like Nike commercials and stuff, but you're making a gang of money.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, as promised, I wanted to talk about loneliness. And
I want to go.
And I already left.
I texted both of you guys over the weekend and like nobody got back to me.
I was on a hike, man. I had the reception. It was terrible.
I just ignored
you. Texted me?
I'll be honest. I was like, he wants.
What's
something.
Your number, man? Maybe I don't have a story. That could be the problem.
Miles and I both got at the same time and we were like, do you want.
Don't fucking.
No, you're not supposed to say this part out loud.
Bring it up, right?
Are mics on?
No.
Uh-oh.
So I've been reading a lot lately about like how this upcoming generation is the loneliest generation that we've ever had, like Generation Z, the young people coming up behind millennials. Like, so people who are in college now, in high school now, just getting out of college.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're basically the least mentally healthy, the most likely to self-harm. And just as Americans, we are the loneliest we've ever been in terms of how we answer polls, like how lonely are we, how we answer questions, like how many people would you trust like to tell that you had a problem? And it's like the answer's between 0 and 1. Like people are just like, we don't have close friends really anymore.
I told the lower half of my best friend.
I told his dick.
Because I knew that dick wouldn't say shit.
Right.
In his mouth.
But yeah, so one theory on this that made a lot of sense to me is this idea that America is sort of at the logical endpoint of this sort of neo-capitalist or like neoliberal period that was started by like the Reagan-Thatcher thing, where it's like we're all, you know, individuals in this world where it's like pure competition. All of the like collectivist ideas like unions and, you know, staying a part of a company that has like a pension and stuff like that, that stuff has all gone away. And now, you know, we're in this place where it's like gig economy. We're all just like independent from any organization. In a gig economy, we switch jobs more than we ever have before. And in that world, we're all individual units of value accumulation in a zero-sum game. And to put that in context, the person was saying that like each paradigm sort of conforms to the age that it's in. So Christianity was the main paradigm during the Dark Ages, when it was like a lot of serfs and servants. And the best thing you could do for your survival was not rock the boat and kind of turn the other cheek and just, you know, go along and get along. And that was the best way to survive. And our paradigm isn't necessarily what we think it is. It's more of a, the thing that people think is unique about America is, you know, when they come here from other countries, is that we value individualism versus collectivism like more than anywhere else, to the point of like, if you show an American a picture of a fish apart from a school of fish, they're like, oh, well, that one fish is the leader and he's standing apart because he's like special, whereas other people just think of it as like a lonely fish.
But oh, like Americans are like, hell yeah, that guy's fucking leading the charge.
He knows some shit, man.
Right, other people are like, oh, have they been ostracized?
Yeah, they were actually talking about a thing that doesn't really, they don't have a theory for why it is, but they were basically saying that the further west, so if you start in Asia and keep going west, like it seems like you go from the most collectivist ideals in the world all the way to the most individualistic ideas in the world.
Right.
And like the west coast of America is like the peak of feeling like you have to be an individual.
Right.
You aren't part of any, you know, Silicon Valley is not part of any, they're very anti-union, pro, like, we're going to shake up this world with our individual inventions.
But we need mass amounts of people to help us.
Just... Right. Yes.
Well, can I comment?
Yeah, no, yeah, come on in.
I think a lot of it has to do with, like, the Reagan-Thatcher stuff. I think a lot of it has to do with Wall Street.
Yeah.
And the greed part of it was that these people already on the top wanted more than they had already.
Right.
So they convinced people, like, no, if you work really hard, you should be a millionaire, too. Mm-hmm. So you should have all this stuff. Which is like, that's the system before was like pretty great, where it was like, if you were the manager or someone higher up, your wages weren't incredibly higher than the workers.
Right.
You just got to go, instead of go camping at the lake, you got a cabin at the lake.
Right. Right.
That's right. What, because you did more work. So you know what I mean? So your responsibilities were more because of whatever, which I don't think, I think it was a good balance between the two things that I think, you know, is it was the greatest give and take for us is like the laziness of man. And then, you know, there's that part of like us working collectively, but then against human nature, that's why communism doesn't work.
Right.
Because we can't fully do it collectively. And some people are better than others. Some people have different things. So they get different rewards.
But we're at like a far extreme of the opposite of communism and socialism.
Well, yes. And because it's like we were talking about earlier with the, we have this technology, and we're using it to buy stuff.
Right. And people are working much harder than, like, or working at a, like, their output has even gone up over the years.
Yeah.
But wages don't go up and other things like that. It's like, no, they're just whipping the masses harder to get them, like, work better. Uh-huh. And then, but it's like, oh, but there's no reward.
So they numb.
We're not going to figure out how to do
numb.
That. Yeah.
Numb.
See, and I think a lot of the stuff like social media and things like that are really good numbing and time wasting and
18
know,
minutes
time
to
devouring.
Pick what you're going to watch.
Yeah. But
right, not 18 minutes to think about like how you're going to bring down the capitalist structure.
Or, yeah, how can I collectively work to make all my friends' lives better along with mine?
Right.
The CEO, just you mentioned the CEO to worker compensation ratio. So in 1965, it was like in the 20s, CEO made 20 times more than the average worker. By 2000, it was almost 400 times.
Seems too much.
Yes. And now it's like almost 300. So it's gone down a little bit because people kind of got wise to this. But another thing that they were talking about specific to this generation is helicopter parenting. And just this idea that parents now are more protective and more, they overschedule their kids' times and like spend all their time like focusing on their kids and having anxiety about their kids. And that's something that I've noticed just having kids, that like just that the conventions now are not, when I was a kid, the convention was just let your kid go ride his bike, figure out, make mistakes for himself. Like, you know, I was riding my bike and put a fucking stick in the front wheel and flipped over.
Like Indiana Jones and shit?
Like an idiot.
You only do that once.
Yeah, you only do that once.
Yeah.
And they were saying that that might also have something to do with mental health of this coming generation, is that they're sort of hothouse flowers. They've been protected from having to make any of the decisions themselves, like make any of the mistakes that you get to make when your parents aren't everywhere kind of over-managing your life. And one thing that I was thinking, and I've had this thought a couple times, is maybe it's that because we don't have these collective identities, we don't have these groups that we're really a part of, when your kid comes along and you have this kind of forced collective relationship, it's like a pinprick of light against the complete like darkness of just your lonely existence. And people sort of like overcompensate and like just become obsessed with their children. You kind of see it in social media where people like over document the lives of their children.
I think that's more about them on social media.
Yeah.
Like, I think they use that because they get likes. That makes them feel good.
Yeah.
That's the one where it's like, I think there is that sharing with your family or whatever and your friends. But I think a lot of, some of what you're talking about, I do think is narcissism.
Totally.
And it goes with technology. It's like, we can make money or a lot easier and from different places. So we're there with our kids a lot more. And I think a lot of those parents are trying to get their kids to be something they want them to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's more of a problem now than it ever has been because of specialization. And like what I try to stay conscious of is like, I was an athlete growing up. I was outside. I played every sport, whatever season. My son could give a fuck about sports.
Right.
But he's
right.
athletic.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So like, I've had to back off like putting him in stuff like that.
Right.
Where
right,
it's
right.
like he likes to draw and that's how he has his stuff. So I have to take him to like art stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But I see other parents that have kids that they force them to do this stuff that they like.
Right, because it's their values.
But that's not unique to this generation.
Right, though, that's what know? I was saying. Like, I knew a lot of, like, sports dads who were fucking terrifying back when I was a kid.
Right, right, yeah. And even my dad, like, my grandfather tried to get my dad to play a bunch of sports, too, because it was sort of like, well, that's what you're supposed to do.
Right.
And my dad hated sports, but then, like, so then he raised me in a way who's like, yo, do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
He's like...
I try to find athletic things for him to do so because I understand that exercise is an important part of a balanced life.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to make him understand like there are certain athletic things that are fun for you. Like he likes swimming. We're gonna go play ping pong at this Korean ping pong hall. I like to take him to. Once he saw how good these old Korean people were, he was like, "This is awesome."
Yeah. He's like, "How do I get like that?" He's like, "Put in 10,000 hours."
Yeah. Come here every day at 3 p.m.
My mother-in-law whips my. I thought I was good at table tennis. My mother-in-law. Oh, my
mom. Yeah.
Fucking.
My mom was secretly good at ping pong.
It was weird. It's an Asian thing.
Yeah. No. In Japan, it's big. And it's funny. I got a ping pong table like right after Forrest Gump came out. Because I was like, yo, I need to get in this ping pong life. And I remember my mom fucking smoked me with one of the first games, and I cried. I was like, this is what did you tell me? And she's like, oh, is this how you do it? And
oh,
she was
yes.
just fucking, I was like, yo, you're fucking around, mom.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's so fun.
Yeah. But yeah, you're trying to, yeah, I guess, I mean, you look, we're all just trying to do right, you know?
But I think that has something to do with, like, we're more narcissistic in the individualism. We're putting that on our stuff onto kids instead of letting them.
Yeah. No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Like, I played three sports because I wanted to play three sports.
Right.
Like, my dad wasn't like, hey, you're going to play this now. It was just like, what's in season? I remember wanting to play volleyball one time just because I didn't have a team to be on.
Right.
When I got done playing in college, I didn't want to be on a team anymore.
Right.
Which is odd now. That was one of the beauties of stand-up to me. It was like, oh, I don't have to depend on anyone but me.
It's just me.
And if I let myself down, I can handle that more than if I let someone else down.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing to understand about yourself.
Well, that's good. And how do you feel about that?
I feel fine.
Okay. That's what I'm hearing.
That's what I'm hearing. Okay with everything.
Good. Yeah. But I do feel like I am trying to figure out where the helicopter parenting. I think it is tied to the individualism thing and social media and wanting to overshare on social media because it's a way to, like, the neo-capitalism model that we were talking about, the Reagan-Thatcher thing, is a zero-sum game where if your friend succeeds, it's actually bad for you because, like, you are comparing yourself. It's like a zero-sum thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, social media is basically a machine for making you feel inadequate. Like, and so I don't know necessarily what it is about how people relate to their children and that makes them want to like overshare and put that on social media and also overmanage the kids' lives. But I think it's tied to this new sort of loneliness in some way.
Well, social media is the whole thing is to make you feel insecure.
Right.
So you keep doing stuff and showing stuff. So you're insecure about other people and you're not. You're
right.
And I think without subconsciously, a lot of people put that or trying to fix that insecurity they feel to make sure their child doesn't have it.
Right.
And they're overdoing it.
Yeah.
Because of whatever reason.
Yeah.
And like, I think there's also this thing that human beings have to accept that your children are going to hate you for a while anywhere. That's just the science of how that happens. Is like, you're going to fuck them up a little bit because you're fucked up.
Right.
So you have to accept that. I think we overcompensate that because we know that. And then sometimes we fuck them up even worse.
But I feel like we need our children to like us more than past generations.
Give a fuck about
I know.
That.
Yeah, I don't think it's healthy.
But I think you're right.
Right.
I
think
personally
this generation,
don't give a shit.
Like my parents' generation, didn't give a shit how we felt about them, and this generation, like the people I see around me who have kids, care more. Like, seem like they want their kids to like them more, and maybe it's changing. But I definitely noticed that. About past, like the generation of kids who were in college now, like that they had relationships with their parents that was like a little weird like that.
Oh, I didn't.
You didn't feel that?
Both my parents were, no, I felt that.
Oh,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Like I would, yeah, totally in college you'd see people like, my mom's my best friend. Like that's fucking crazy. That is so, I live 3,000 miles away to this day because I like a healthy relationship with my mother.
Right.
I have to be 3,000 miles away. Yeah. But that, yeah, I know what you're talking about because I remember I said that to my son like when he was like four. He's just started school, so he was like five or six. And he said something. He was like, I don't want to be your friend. I was like, man, that's cool with me. Like, I'm not your friend. I'm your dad.
I'm your manager, homie.
So I have to do stuff that you don't like to make you better. And you just saw it compute in his head. He was like, oh, I'm going to have to deal with this dude a little different than everybody else.
Right.
Like, yeah. So, and he knows.
Yeah. There it is.
But I think it's because my parents did the same thing. And I saw, like, even my dad was my football coach and my baseball coach. He was assistant baseball coach, but he was football coach. And he treated me. I wasn't like the coach's son. I was this dude that the coach didn't like.
Yeah. You were number 19.
Yes, right. Because. Yes.
Hey, 19, get
hey,
over
19,
it.
Get over
because
here.
I was never going to be the one that, you know, they couldn't say that. Right. So I had to earn it a little more.
Yeah.
Which was fucking frustrating.
Yeah.
Especially be like, oh, like parents favor their children? What is that like?
But I think that's what's crazy about the fact that people have changed the way they react to their kids is like how I'm interacting with my kids, and it's very early on in that process, but it's so determined by how my parents interacted with me.
Yeah.
But there has been this shift where a generation went from, you know, like not giving a shit about their kids to suddenly like wanting to be friends with their kids and helicopter parenting their kids.
Well, I think it's probably like, right, every parent, like just the basis of it is that you want your kid to live better than you did. So as we know more about science and psychology and all these other things, like now, like, you know, our parents didn't know, you know, that like X, Y, or Z might not be healthy or this, that, and the other. So we were allowed to make mistakes. But as we know more, I think maybe that contributes to the idea of like, oh, now all these dangers have been very like precisely identified.
I didn't know about emotional intelligence.
Right.
That wasn't talked about when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that phrase or what that was. Yeah. I think that was just intelligence to a certain degree. But separating it is something like you read the parenting books and stuff. They talk about emotional intelligence,
right,
which I think is very, very important. And I think that's where some of the helicopter parenting comes in, because people do realize like how you react to things does have an effect on how successful you can be, especially in our corporate system.
Yeah.
Because if you're emotionally intelligent, you know not to react the way your emotions are.
Right.
You're to be cold, and then you can move up in this cold corporate system.
Yeah.
So that's where some of that shit comes from.
Yeah. And I think it's just a overall imbalance of, you know, this world where
values.
Yeah, where we don't have like groups that we're a part of, and like it's just this like one family unit, and that's like your only outside relationship where you have somebody that like you just inherently have so much love for and like need love back because you're not getting it anywhere else is sort of my
That is
loose
a good point.
Theory.
Like even the individualism, like in groups, like even if you want to be a part of like, let's say I want to be a Raiders fan,
right,
even involved in that subculture, everyone's like, I'm the biggest Raiders fan.
Yeah.
Or right. I'm this. And then, right. like, even in that culture, you're still competing to be the best at whatever. So it's not right. like we're cheering on a team that yeah, none of right. us have anything to do with.
But look how long my spikes are but on my shoulder yes, pads. Yes. So fuck out of here.
Yeah, but I killed a Dodgers fan one time.
right, right, right.
That
right.
kind of, yeah, that kind of, well, I am a right. Raiders fan. But
right, right.
But yeah. it is like, even that stuff is like, even like, I do it. Like, I hate Alabama. I hate them, the University of Alabama. But every year they play in the national championship, and I cheer for them because they're from the SEC.
Right.
I didn't play in the SEC. I right. didn't even go to the SEC. But I grew up cheering for Tennessee, which I don't cheer for anymore because we've had a tough decade.
Yeah.
yeah, it has been a rough year.
But I still do this. I fall into those things where it's like, I don't care. But when it's fun to do.
Mm.
Has Tennessee football just been bad since Peyton Manning? Or
No. Motherfucker. I'm not a Peyton Manning fan.
Vince.
I know, but that's so weird. People, that throws people off. No, he played at Tennessee. T. Martin won a national championship.
Oh, T. Martin.
The year after Peyton left.
Yeah. No, I was going to say Vince Young because their colors are both orangish.
Burnt orange is Texas.
All right.
Bright orange is Tennessee. See, I didn't even go there. I didn't even graduate. See, I don't even care.
But you have the pride.
Look what happened.
But I don't think
I
pride
had a good time
in
growing
groups
up at
is wrong.
Stadium as well.
I just think there, it used to be, I don't know. There, I was talking last week about how like bowling used to be, like people used to have activities. It was church. It was like
softball.
Yeah, we were part of a bowling league. We're part of some shit that like you would have a team that you belonged to that you could just like, feel part of, feel like you are in a group. And I feel like because we don't have that anymore, and it's just something like I never knew that there was a bowling boom of the 20th century. Like that shit just got kind of written out because it didn't seem important. But now I feel like we're seeing that it was important to like have these groups that we were a part of.
I think you don't see them as much because like I played in an adult rec league baseball team that was nice.
Right.
And like I think they're there. I think. Like, I didn't realize that all that was happening until somebody was like, hey, I have a baseball team.
Right.
Would you want to be a part of it? And then you're like, oh, there are these groups inside these, but we get so individually focused.
Yeah.
That you're not like.
Or I think there's just not as much emphasis. So, like, you have to actually be someone who personally you desire that. So you're going to seek it out. But it, like, whereas back then, it was just, those are like the options that were just in front of everybody.
Right. Yeah. Now, we all wandered to the baseball field because that was the spot.
You just got to wonder if that's something you need to feed yourself. And that's definitely something we all need.
Well, Billy Wayne, it's been a pleasure having you, as always, man. Where can people find you?
At Billy Wayne Davis on Twitter, at Billy Wayne Davis on Instagram. And then. Yeah, we're about to announce all the tour dates for 2019, but I'm done for this year. It's been fun. Thank you all the Zeitgang for, there's at least two or three every show now.
Fuck yeah.
Which has been dope. I was just in Santa Cruz and people were, there's like a large number of Zeitgang people in Santa Cruz, which I get it. They're smart people. It's a wonderful place to live.
Yeah.
Potheads, right? A lot of.
There's surfing potheads. Right. Yeah. It's a cool place. It was underrated.
Boom.
I should have went with Santa Cruz. Yeah. Damn it.
Well, we can still say retroactively underrated Santa Cruz.
Yeah, you should check it out.
Great boardwalk.
Billy Wayne, is there a tweet that you've been enjoying?
I've been enjoying Trump's tweets the last week and a half because they're just all over the place. And it's just
this Donald Trump guy.
Yeah, the president's tweets have been really fun.
Yeah.
Because it's just that person that is like, there's a part of you that like, you're just going to go down lying.
Yeah.
You know, where there's no point where he's like, all right, you got me. Where it's like, you're going to have to shoot me in the face.
Right. Right.
So there's something funny about it.
Yeah. I really, I don't think he's gone leaving office without some sort of constitutional crisis.
Oh, there's going to be some shenanigans.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, just trying to bay the cat.
Just like holding on to one of the columns as they pull him away.
Right.
Yeah.
Miles,
where can people find you?
Twitter, Instagram, at Miles of Gray. I liked a lot of tweets, actually. One is from Dan White, at Dan White, is his handle. It says, every comedian has to work day jobs they don't necessarily, quote, love to support their passion. There's no shame in it. Some are baristas, some are servers. I work for the DePaul Medical School sawing penises off of cadavers to reduce weight and save on transportation costs.
Saw that.
Fucking beauty. Another one is just from the Washington Post that feels like a joke. It says, It's a headline from the Washington Post. It says, "I voted for Trump. Now his wall may destroy my butterfly paradise." Okay. And lastly is another one. It's like a quote tweet. The first is of like this woman looking really cute. It's like three photos. She's posing and says, "I want to star in a Netflix series. Twitter, do your thing." And then Alex at N7UGHTY just goes, "The fuck are we supposed to do?" Got way more fucking retweets than her tweet.
That's amazing. A tweet I liked is Marsha Belsky tweeted, "Your stripper name is John plus Valjean." And you can follow me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on, Miles.
Oh, we're getting it hopping. We're doing something a little funky, a little reggae vibe. This one's from Jennifer Lara. It's called "I Am in Love," and woo, it's a toe tapper. It's gonna get you feeling good. No Christmas music right now. Just let's keep it airy.
All right, we're gonna ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. We'll talk to you guys then.
Bye.
I'm in love.
Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.